position number 23230, Reel 2.
Mr. Taylor, Reel 2. We were talking about your time starting early 41 aboard HMS Viscount, operating out of Liverpool, on Atlantic convoys.
That's right, yes.
What's the next thing you remember, or the next point you want to make about that time and your work as a supply?
Well, I'm not quite sure when it was exactly, but we were on a convoy, and it was at night, and we'd had the radar fitted, and it was night time, and they picked up a signal of something on the surface, which the captain thought was a U-boat, and he decided to ram it, and it all got very exciting on the plot, because I was saying to the coxswain, ship's head, ship's head, ship's head, and in the end he said, fuck the ship's head. Because he was too busy. Anyway.
What did you mean by ship's head?
Well, that's the course. 270 or whatever it was. In other words, you had to know what direction we were going to do it on the plot. And the speed. And then the distance and angle of the submarine compared to your own ship.
So what happened? You were told to...
Well, we rammed. The captain increased speed, and we caught her midships. And as soon as we hit, he went into river astern, so that he didn't go too far. But the bows were badly damaged. But when we hit, of course, everybody dashed out to the side to see what was happening, and the submarine slid down our port side, and of course everybody opened up with everything they'd gotten. The thing sank, and that was it.
Were there any survivors?
No.
And you don't know the number?
No, I don't know the number, I'm afraid.
Was there much damage done to the ship? Your ship?
Yes. It's rather good, actually, because one of my stores was damaged. And it was just followed of the stoker's mess. And I remember the stoker's mess, the damaged party came along and shored it all up. And we were detached from the convoy and made our way to Liverpool, you know, because of the damage. And it's rather interesting that when we got to Liverpool, one or two people said, hey, Jack, you remember I handed him my binoculars just before? And I said, oh, yes. So that this, for me, was an ideal opportunity to square the books, because lots of things were lost by enemy action. And I went through the ledgers again and again. If I thought we were a bit short on something, I'd say, well, so many were damaged and all the rest of it. And if there were things there that I still didn't know what they were, because nobody had asked for them, to be on the safe side, I wrote those off. So that I gave the captain a big list of all the stuff that had been lost, which he signed, and of course there were one or two binoculars on it as well.
Did you ever engage in selling stores, or were you just balancing the book? In other words, did you edge into the black market?
Oh, good heavens, no.
So you were just getting stores, replace things that hadn't been properly accounted for.
That is right, because the bank account was in dock, with nobody responsible for the stores for so long, you see. And I suppose it's all changed now, but there were all sorts of things then, sort of navigation things and all the rest of it, that I didn't have the foggiest idea what they were.
What about the did you require a refit after that? Another refit?
Oh, yes.
What happened during that?
Well, I what happened was that the captain was rather pleased, and he said to Taylor, I think we're going to would you like to go for a commission? And I said, oh yes, on one condition. He said, what's that? I said, I don't want to be on the supply side. So he put me in for a commission on the upper deck.
Now, what do you think it attracted his attention to you? I mean,
oh, the fact that I was on the plot.
So it wasn't,
and the fact that I'd, you know, given him a clean bill of health on his stores.
Now, when were you sent for training for your commission? Do you remember? Do you have any idea?
Well, first of all, I had to go for an interview at Liver Buildings.
What do you remember of that?
Oh, I remember that, really, they wanted to find whether they read the newspapers and what was happening in the Far East and all the rest of it, and what cruise has been sunk and all the rest of it, which I bugged up the day before, and they went through all that. And then I passed that, and they sent me to King Alfred at Brighton.
And do you know when you got there?
Honestly, I don't.
Still in 41, was it? How long? Just trying to sort out how long you were with the Thornycroft, really. The Viscount, sorry.
Honestly, it's... think. I guess it would be early 42 when I went to King Alfred in Brighton.
Now, what was the setup when you got to King Alfred? Cause
well, first of all, we were in digs. We were housed in the houses on the seafront. And
what were the digs like, the billets like?
Oh, very nice, as far as I can say. Yeah, the landladies and so forth, and we just kipped out there and slept there, and during the day we were at King Alfred doing our training, right. As such.
What do you remember of your training?
Very little, actually. Very little. We did navigation. Yes, I remember that, because with the experience I had on the plot, I was a bit of a dab hand at that, and I remember the PO saying, you know, we've got a Jack Dusty here that's better than you lot, and that made me feel rather good. Anyway, we did navigation, seamanship.
What about seamanship?
Well, you know, they gave you the manual, and they asked you all sorts of questions, and you mugged it up, and wrote essays about it, and...
What about practical seamanship? How much of that? The sort of,
well, they did have a motorboat somewhere, but that was all it was. Because King Alfred, as you probably know, was on the front at Brighton, and was it a holiday place or something, a hotel?
Old
was.
Swimming pool or something. Old swimming pool.
That is right, no swimming pool, yes. Oh, and then we also went, it's coming back to me now, at King Alfred, and then there was another place just further along the coast. What was it called?
At Hove.
A bit further along than that. And I know we used to go there for, I think we were stationed there for a little while. I know we used to go on long country runs and all the rest of it. And we did duty at night on I seem to remember a tower, you know, where we... Very hazy, but I remember the tower being there with a rifle at night on guard. But as regards practical training, it was all done by books and all the rest of it.
So you feel it wasn't practical enough then? I mean, was it adequate, the training?
I think not.
Why not? What were you missing?
Well, first of all, there was nothing about gunnery. Absolutely nothing. And I still don't know much about guns. No, I don't think it was adequate at all. But I think at that time, you know, everything was sort of... everybody was dreading going on LCTs for the Normandy landings. I think that a lot of people took commissions knowing that full well that's where they'd end up. But I was lucky.
Even in 42?
Pardon?
Even in 42?
I think so. Well, late 42, anyway.
And how long were you at, doing your cadet training?
I shouldn't think of it, more than 3 or 4 months.
And what was your next posting? as an officer, of course.
And the next posting was HMS Saker, which is New York.
So that would be in 1943?
Yes.
And how did you get out there?
Oh, I went on a ship's company on a frigate who was doing a convoy run, and they dropped me off in Halifax. And I remember this. To get from Halifax to New York, we took a steamer, a civvy steamer, and I know there was quite a few of my peers on board, and also a load of American wax. And it's quite fun, actually. And then when we got to New York, we were stationed at the... Oh, dear. One of the big hotels near... what's the famous park there? Gosh, my memory.
Central Park.
Near Central Park, yes.
And that was HMS Saker.
Yes, HMS Saker.
It was a shore station, of course.
Oh, yes, it was a hotel.
It was a Brabazon or something. Brabazon or...
Oh, no.
So you think it was the Barbizon Plaza, but...
Yes.
And what
I could take you there.
this was officers only?
Yes. And basically, they put us there. I don't know why they didn't put us up in Boston, but they've put us in New York, probably thinking we'd enjoy it there. But basically, waiting until the ship was ready in Boston. It had been built in Boston.
Now, what about recreations while you were in New York? How did they treat you, the Americans? What sort of...
Oh, absolutely wonderfully. Everything was laid on. There were parties and receptions and all the rest of it. And everybody's very friendly and most helpful, and thoroughly enjoyed it. And just about that time, 43, of course, the Americans, they got officers there who had never been to sea, and they were quite interested to know what I'd been doing.
So, how long were you there for?
About a fortnight, I suppose.
And then you went to Boston, I presume?
Boston, yes.
So where were we staying in Boston?
Oh, we went straight onto the Byron.
So that would be... The Byron was sort of launched in August, September 1943.
Yeah.
And commissioned in October. So you joined her in October.
I joined her in October, yes.
Now, what were your first impressions of the Byron? It was your first ship, really, wasn't it?
As an officer, yes. Oh, I remember, it's very funny, actually, now you mention it, that I said that I got over to the States on a frigate. A frigate. And when we got to Halifax, we tied up alongside my old ship, the Viscount. And I was on the forecastle, and then there was a core, look at Jack Dusty.
So, what were your first impressions of the Byron then?
Well,
it was
very luxurious compared to the Viscount.
In what way?
Well, it had refrigerators, bathrooms, showers, bunks. I mean, on the Viscount, there weren't any showers. If you wanted a bath, you got two buckets of water and put a foot in each and screw yourself down. And you had to pump the water.
And what about the officers' accommodation? Where was that? And what was it like?
Oh, it was functional, you know. But, the Americans didn't have any wood anywhere. It was all metal and sort of afraid of fires. But we were two officers to a cabin. We were very nice compared to the Viscount. It's luxurious, really.
What did you think of the sort of America, the through decks, which was something that the British destroyers didn't have, and the all welded construction? How did that strike you?
It didn't strike me at all, actually. I wasn't interested in how it was made. There's one thing I do remember about the time in Boston was that these American ships were set up for canteen messing. And that means it's just like going into your local restaurant, Hope Yourself restaurant, you know. You go along and say, I'll have some of that, some of that, some
so
of
cafeteria,
that. Cafeteria messing, that's right. And that wasn't very successful, actually.
Why not? Because people say it wasn't, but what was wrong with it?
Well, what was wrong with it was that there were three watches, and the watches used to go to the cafeteria at different times, you see. So you'd have one lot, then another lot, and by the time the third lot were there, there was nothing left. And there were almost riots, you know. And it was, and of course, being an ex-Jack Dafty, that became my part of ship. Trying to quell riots all the time. Anyway, eventually, of course, they went back to the
canteen messing.
I get it. Yeah, canteen messing.
And what about? I mean, can you go through some of the key figures on the ship? I mean, who was the captain, and what did you think of him?
Oh, I remember him very, very well as Captain Lieutenant. Who was that? Lieutenant Southcombe. A lovely chap. Great fella.
Southcombe?
Well, he was very friendly, had a sense of humour, and he was just one of the boys, really. And I admire him terribly. I think that, as with all naval officers, I think that if they'd been in Civvy Street, they'd have been just as successful as they were in the Navy. I admired them. And
what was it was so good about Southcombe then?
He had a lovely smile. He was such a nice guy. And all the crew loved him. And he was very efficient. And, you know, he was one ideal captain.
And what about the First Lieutenant? Or any of the other officers you particularly remember?
We had a gunner on board, and he was one of the old warrant gunner, and he was a lovely chap as well. But he used to, he was one of the old school, you know, and he really wasn't up on the modern Navy, I don't think. The engineer was a R&R chap, and he was a nice chap, but very blunt and down to earth, you know. First lieutenants, we had two, I think, both RMVR, and they were all right, but it wasn't until we got an RN number one that you could tell the difference, which was old Vepard.
That was quite late on then, late in this anyway. Yes. So, and what was your role on the ship? What was your job? You were a very inexperienced young officer.
That's right.
What were your duties?
Well, the watchkeeping mainly.
Tell me about watchkeeping. What was watchkeeping? Watchkeeping on the bridge, as an officer on the bridge.
Well, you had the con, and when you took over the watch, they told you what the deal was, what course you were going, whether you were zigzagging or not, and where the other ships were. And basically, you just had to follow the routine. Of course, first sign of any panic, you got the old man up.
And the con, do you just explain that, what the con was?
Well, the con means you've got the ship. Yeah. And my other this is an interesting one. I was responsible for supplies, of course, with my background, and I was also in charge of confidential books and codes.
Well, tell me about the supply officer part first. What was the difference between, you know, before you'd just been the supply assistant, now you're the supply officer?
Well, what happened was that on board we had a petty officer, a supply petty officer, and a Jack Dusty, supply assistant. And they reported to me. And of course, I knew the routine, so it all went very well.
And what about the responsibility for the codes? And
well, that's a good one, actually, because messages used to come in, and I forget the detail, but I would have to go to the had a safe in my cabin and get the appropriate code book out for that. And I know that we were on a Russian convoy once, and a signal came in. I mean, a lot of these things were sort of routine things, you know. The Tirpitz were still in harbour and all the rest of it. And anyway, one day a message came in, and I went to get the confidential book. I couldn't find it. A court martial here. I couldn't find it. So anyway, we put into the Faroes, and I went ashore, borrowed this book, and spent about 4 days copying it out. They hadn't got photocopiers in those days, and I copied this bloody book. I don't know how I did it, but it was only a routine message anyway. It was nothing vitally important. But the whole thing was hushed up, and I never I got away with it.
Now, you'd have your sea trials while you were at Boston. Do you remember anything about the sea trials?
No, except I was very nervous because it was my first, as a young officer. As a young officer, I was scared of doing the wrong thing. And the funny part about it was that although we'd done signalling, of course, I had to rely on the yeoman. I couldn't read the Morse that was going backwards and forwards.
Well, you were very aware that you were of your inexperience then.
Oh, yes. But the watchkeeping was all right. But I was aware that, my Morse and so forth wasn't very good. And I knew nothing about gunnery.
Now, in December, around December, January, you went to Bermuda. HMS Malabar, Bermuda.
I remember that.
Now, that was your working up trials. What were the working up trials?
It's all very vague now. We did gunnery trials. But I remember Bermuda very well because the population, the expats there, or the British people there, were so stuck up and snobbish that, they were absolutely impossible.
What did they do?
I don't know. The whole attitude was, what are you doing here disturbing our nice life? That was the attitude. I felt awful. And I'll tell you another thing, that as forecastle officer, I one day got my foot involved in a cable. And I had a very bad, it was here, a very bad, I could hardly...
Your right ankle.
My right ankle, yes. And they wanted to put me ashore. And I said, no, I'm not going ashore here. Bugger that for a lot. So I stayed on board and hobbled about for a few weeks before, rather than go ashore there. They weren't very friendly at all, the locals. That's it, I can remember that.
The next thing, you'd go went up to Argentia, and then they're on convoy HX275 to Britain, to Londonderry.
Yeah, we were based in Londonderry, yes.
What do you remember of the first convoy? Anything?
No, nothing at all. I don't remember anything.
Now, you were based at Londonderry.
Yes.
You seem to have been with B1 Escort Group at first. Your first thing was to go on a Russian convoy. Had you been refitted first before you left on that?
I don't think so, no.
So the refit would be to take the American fittings out.
Oh, you're quite right. We did have, we tore the wardroom to bits and made it a bit more comfortable.
In what way?
I think we had cushions like this, which the Americans didn't have. I think that's about all. I don't think a lot was taken out of the American fittings.
What was the wardrobe was much more comfortable for you?
It was quite comfortable, yes.
Now, what about this first Russian convoy? That was right out to Russia. And that was in January and February.
That's right. That's when we went into the Faroes.
What do you remember of the Arctic convoy?
Well, actually, we had an eventful trip, but of course it was very, very cold. And it had a lot of hours of darkness. And
how bad were they?
Oh, we had to have steam hoses to keep the guns free.
What would you wear when you were on the bridge to try and keep the cold
out? Well, I always wore a battle dress, and you just had duffel coats. That's all. Didn't have any furs or any.
There's no special equipment?
Not as far as I know, no. Just duffel coats. Lots of underwear.
And you say that it was fairly eventful. What do you remember?
Uneventful.
Uneventful?
Uneventful, yes.
The Maharata was sunk while you were on it, but not something...
No.
So it was mainly the coal that fixed...
That's right, yes.
And then after that, you seem to be on various, you know, vetting. What do you remember of the routine trips in March and April? You seem to have gone to...
Are we talking 43 or 44 now?
Into 44 now.
Yes, well, I remember we were doing escorting strange-looking things, which we didn't know what they were, across in the channel. And later we found out that it was these pipes... flexible pipes or hoses which carry the petrol over.
This is part of the Pluto.
That's right, yes.
And where were you taking them, across the channel or around the coast?
Well, we never really got sight of the French coast. I presume it's around the coast. I'm a bit hazy there.
And you were based at the Nore command, the Nore command for a while.
Don't remember that at all.
Okay, what's the next thing you remember?
I remember when I was in Liverpool, I had occasion to go to the torpedo workshops. And as I was going through there was a wren, and she was lovely. She had beautiful blue eyes, and I really fancied her, but nothing happened. But I remember when we went to Harwich, she was there. And I made my number. And I know we went away for a weekend, but nothing happened. But she was a lovely girl, and I remember to this day. I can even remember her name. Can I? Yes. Brewer was her surname. Kathleen Brewer, yes. Funny how you remember these things. Anyway, that's all I remember about Harwich. Ah, Pluto parts to Weymouth Bay, that makes sense.
If you stop.
I remember this because...
What's this? Sorry, if you just... It's not on the tape. The collision with HMS Talletside.
Yes.
What happened then?
Well, all I remember was that... I should explain that I shared a cabin with a bloke called Cliff Selly. And we were on the starboard side... Just behind the forecastle, our cabin. And Sally had the first watch, and I relieved him. And I clambered up the ladder, and I said, "Hi, Cliff, what's going on? Everything okay?" He said, "You're joking." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "We've just hit the turnip side." I said, "Come on." He said, "It's really..." He said, "If you go down and have a look." I said, "Well, we'll later." Anyway, I took over, and we had hit the talent side, and it was only a glancing blow, but it was about I should imagine, about 20 foot from where I was sleeping. And I knew nothing about it. And that's gospel.
And so, how had it happened? Did you find out how it had happened?
No, with nobody. It was very hush-hush. And it never came to light. But it was there, but there was never a court of inquiry or anything.